I'm Kier from In Defense Of, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome to the Season 4 Special American Real Thanksgiving Edition of the Starling Tribune. Since all the CW TV show Arrow is on hiatus for this week of the U.S. Real Thanksgiving, we're taking a look back at one of the comic book runs that inspired this season, DC's Green Arrow, Year One, written by Andy Diggle.
Wait, isn't he in prison? In the bottom of the quiver?
That's a familiar name.
Yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit later. Hello, I am Stargate Pioneer. My friends call me SP. And with me this week are our reporters, including Chris.
Here's to a new life.
And Neil.
That's not who I am anymore. I'm a hunter, and now I'm pissed.
Of course, as I said before, I am SP. One man can make all the difference. This podcast, as I mentioned before, is recorded on Thursday. The real Thanksgiving, November 26, 2015, live on the Blub streaming service. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is my real voice. We are just a few guys that discuss the TV show Arrow, and just a little reminder that I am not a comic expert. No, I'm a sci-fi guy. Go Star Wars. But I'm catching up with the comic lore in little leaps and bounds, thanks to great folks like Chris.
So I'm not sure I'm quite the comic expert I thought I was, because I hadn't read this book until we decided to talk about it.
And Neil.
This is one of my favorites. I'm so happy. I'm very fanboying out. Oh, yeah. That's the good stuff.
For our audio listener, I'm actually holding up my copy of the Green Arrow. I guess it's called a graphic novel, trade paperback, whatever you want to call it. Yes, I did go paper with this. I did not go digital, which hurt me for a couple of days because took a couple of days for me to get to the store to get it, but I'd have it, and it's great actually smelling it.
Yes. It's that new comic smell.
Exactly.
That was only mildly creepy.
Because you've done it before, too.
Yeah, this is the man in that box down there on the Blab streaming service that says he still buys all hard copy and then takes the digital copies. So you know new comic smell, my friend.
I mean, if I want to smell a comic anymore, I take my tablet and go... And it smells like plastic.
Yeah, it smells like finger.
And I'm sad.
Yeah, it doesn't smell like an ATR 2100, though.
It also smells like Windows.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's got that Windows stink.
If you want to know all about that, go listen to Gunna Geek this week. We had a teardown on it. Anyway, let's get back to this podcast. During this podcast, we'll be talking about the DC Comics limited series Green Arrow Year One from 2007. While it is not really a spoiler to talk about the series that's been in print for almost 10 years, yeah, I'm old, we'll be spoiling the heck out of this comic as we talk about the plot lines and the characters and how they have impacted the CW TV show Arrow. So consider yourself warned. Hey, just a little reminder, you can catch up on all of our past shows and in the off weeks at our archive found at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. I just can't say it without saying .com like that. Sorry.
.com.
That works.
So, Neil, since you are the comic expert and you are the one that suggested this, thank goodness, break it down for me.
Alrighty. So, as SP has said, we are talking about Green Arrow Year One, published in December 2007 as a limited edition series, and then in graphic novel format in 2008. The writer is Andy Diggle, and again, we'll talk about why that name's familiar, but if you're a comic fan, you've probably run into the name Andy Diggle before. he wrote The Losers, which was actually turned into a DC movie. He's also known for his work on Swamp Thing, his work on Constantine Hellblazer.
Nice. So yeah,
he's got Constantine roots as well. Adam Strange and Silent Dragon at DC. And then over at Marvel, he's written for both Thunderbolts and Daredevil. And he's done a lot of indie work over at Dynamite as well. So a great writer. And it really shows in this show or in this issue. As well, the pencils and the art is by Jock. And that's his pen name. His real name is Mark Simpson. He and Andy Diggle have worked together quite a bit. In fact, just today they were tweeting, you know, throwback Thursday pics of them, you know, 5 and 10 years ago on Twitter. So go take a look at Andy Diggle and Jock's Instagram and Twitter accounts. They did all the Losers stuff together as well. So the two of them inspired the DC movie, The Losers.
Nice.
I should mention the colors are by David Barron, and the colors are beautiful in this series. And letters were done by Jared K. Fletcher.
I really enjoyed reading this comic. I really did. I actually devoured it for a first read in the matter of an hour and a half, maybe. And I was just soaking it all in. I went back and I read it again at length a second time and just really enjoyed it. What struck me the most was, of course, Hackett, who is not in the TV show at all. And it makes me wonder if we're going to see a character like Hackett or if they're just going to completely ignore it, maybe reference it sometime later in the season when the story gets a little bit closer to what they have in here. But the thing that is in the TV show, or a reference in the TV show that I did not see in here, is the mystical piece that the Baron is actually looking for something on the island that it is not referenced at all in this comic. And of course, we're talking about China White running the operation versus the Baron in the TV show.
Definitely. Chris, do you want to give us a high-level overview of what happened in this comic and we can jump in?
Season one of Arrow flashbacks happen.
All right, we good? We all on the same page now?
Season one took a lot of inspiration from this book, I realized, after I read it. And it looks like season four's flashbacks are also taking a lot of inspiration.
Right.
Definitely.
Yes, I should have said that. We're talking about the flashbacks. We're not talking about the actual thing, which would be more of the Longbow Hunters, which we got to do again sometime as well.
We'll get to it. Yeah, so for the readers who haven't read this yet, we're trying to get you all stoked to read this graphic novel. Green Arrow Year One is the retelling and the reimagining in 2007 of Oliver Queen's backstory of how he became the Green Arrow in the DC comic universe. Now, his history has come out in bits and pieces over the years, but back in the early 2000s, DC Comics did a whole bunch of Year One books where they kind of retold and updated a lot of these stories. So in the Green Arrow Year One, Ollie is a spoiled rich kid, so that kind of holds with what we know. He was on a boat. It wasn't the Queen's Gambit. I think it was the Queen's something or other, but it was close.
Pacific Queen, I believe.
Pacific Queen. There you go.
Pacific Queen. That's it. Yeah.
And was kind of thrown overboard by kind of his bodyguard. I guess it would have been the Diggle character in the show, probably from season one.
Yes, eventually Diggle character, but I think the dad's bodyguard on the Queen's Gambit would have been the Hackett for this.
Good call, yeah. And it's basically how Ollie survives on the island in learning how to shoot his bow, and he had some archery experience before, if you read the story, and we'll maybe talk about that later. He discovers opium fields, so a lot of season four in there. The fields are being run by China White, and there's a lot of slaves. So again, season four there. And it's how he frees the slaves, takes out China White, and returns back to the mainland, and how he grows along the way. And I think that's the big part. How does he go from the spoiled rich kid to surviving on the island, eventually becoming the Green Arrow?
And also, let's not forget, his personal drug journey is included in here as well.
Right. He's got the opium issue for a little bit. But I know if I broke my arm that bad, I'd probably want some painkillers too.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not begrudging how it went down, but once you're hooked on that stuff, it's very addicting and your body is very much forced to become accustomed to it. So when you go cold turkey, like when I decaffeinate, oh my gosh, the caffeine headaches are just atrocious, which I have recently gone through, by the way, and it's just, ugh.
And did you guys catch the name of the escaped slave? Tiana,
yeah,
is the same name as the character that we're seeing in season four. Direct inspiration again from this book. And it was interesting that she was the one that gave him the opium to let him deal with the pain. It wasn't something that he sought out himself. So
I think he was delirious at the time is part of the reason why she had to do it.
Yeah.
She seemed to have some medical training. You know, it went back and forth in the book where she was on the island, part of this native village or whatever, but then she seemed to have some medical training, which probably took place off the island as well. So I don't know how worldly she really was. And then also in the comic, it was her husband who was killed by China White's men versus her brother.
And the description of how China White killed him was pretty nasty. She was a piece of work. That was the guy that you realize was thrown into the cave with the starving rats or into the cage.
Didn't Slade make a threat like that or something in season two? Or am I thinking of another show?
There was a show called Helix where they had a bunch of rats at the bottom. So did you watch that?
I did not. That's why it was so weird to me that it was popping out into my head. And it's entirely possible. I watch too much TV, so it's probably all colliding together in my head.
It was a movie 12 years ago. Whatever.
Or something somebody tweeted at me like, hey, did you see such and such happen in something? And I went, oh, that's pretty cool. And it got filed in the wrong category in my brain.
Right. I was a bit surprised how, and this might tie into the signaling that we have yet to get to, you know, how Ollie actually signaled a boat to get off the island. Now, we've gone through the signaling before, and was it season two, I believe, for them to get off the island?
Yes.
But the final signal, it hasn't been out there yet, but they torch the boat. Ollie torches a boat in this comic to get the bad guy's attention. I'm like, I don't know if I would do that. My one chance to get off the island, I think I'd think of something else before I did that.
Yeah, I know. He tried using the radio before he got electrocuted, I think, about 3/4 of the way through, when Hackett actually realizes that he's standing in water and he pulls out the power to the cabin. So he did try sending an SOS. That didn't work out so well near the end there.
Yeah, no bueno.
Yeah. And again, Jock's art. Yes, when he shot the plane, that was awesome. Well, and he tried waving it down. That did not work out well for him.
It did not.
Turns out the slavers and drug runners don't want to rescue you when they see you trying to get their attention on the beach of their drug island.
No, they want you to go away because you're not supposed to be there. And then they hunt you down and try to murderize you.
Yes. And that was where my quote at the beginning of the show came from, when he realizes that he's a bit pissed off that they're coming after him.
Just a teeny tiny bit.
Did this give anybody cause to remember the SS Minnow, by the way? For the audio listener, I'm showing a picture of the Pacific Queen beached. Kind of looks like the SS Minnow.
Yeah. Hey, guys, what did you think of his bow, his makeshift bow for the first 2/3 of the show?
Have you ever had some truck springs in your hand before? You know how heavy they are? Do you know how impossible they are to bend? Oh, my gosh.
If your bow is made out of a leaf spring, that's how you get arms like Stephen Amell.
Yeah.
No, that's how you get arms like Chris Hemsworth.
Okay, that's also true. So you're saying that his makeshift bow is Mjolnir?
That's right.
Meow, meow. Yes, of course.
It's meow, meow.
Except for it broke. Aww.
Oh. Well, Mjolnir's broken in the comics before, so it's possible.
Yeah. And the bow broke because of plot. So.
Yes. No, it was pretty rusty. It just finally gave out. That's how I looked at it.
I had an issue with that. That just doesn't snap like that. You're not putting like a ton of weight on it. You're just pulling a string. There's no way that it's...
He's that ripped now, it bends. He's like, and for those that are listening to the audio, I'm flexing on camera.
Yeah, Chris Smash.
All I saw was your man boobs through your shirt.
No, Chris Smash.
SP's mean.
I got your back. I also liked how the leaf springs were drawn throughout it. And again, all credit to Jock for his pencils on this one. Beautiful, beautiful rendering of Ollie. Lots of dynamic shots of Ollie with that bow. Should we talk about the characters and then move on to the art?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, SB, you were already talking about Hackett.
Yeah.
Why did you bring that up at the beginning? Did the character resonate with you, or were you just fascinated by him?
Yeah, he did. He was basically the main antagonist. I would say the Deathstroke-like character to Ollie, because he would show up, and they were friends, right? They were truly friends, and Hackett betrayed Oliver, and he's not thinking really well, because if he had any guts about him, he would have found some way to get Oliver not to come with him. He would have gotten him sick, fed him X-lax or something, so he wouldn't have got on the boat. There's a billion things that you could do to have somebody not go on a trip. And he didn't try any of them. He's like, all right, well, just come with us. And then Hackett is going through the story of popping up here and there, of being the antagonist. Neither one wants to kill each other until the very end, where it literally is one or the other. And that is exactly what has to happen. And the way it happens, I'm not sure Oliver had thought about this whole assault all the way through.
No, and I think he even said something to that effect.
Right. What he does along the way is completely, it's everything right that you want to do in a mass assault. So, and it is scorch and burn type as well. And the boat, I'm not sure what the boat's name was. I looked at the art, could never find it. But when it smashes into the sub-pen doors, I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Oh, that's going to leave a mark.
That's going to be there for a while.
I like the Hackett character, too. You could tell that he was conflicted. And again, credit to Andy Diggle's writing. He didn't want to double tap Ollie when he was on the boat. He pushed him off. He's like, I can't bring myself all the way. And even in those great green panels when they're having the showdown in the jungle, and he fires, I think it's the M203 at him from the sound effect. He still, you know, he didn't go after him the first time. And I think finally he realizes, all right, I've been shot by an arrow a couple times. It's him or me. I can't be nice to this kid anymore, regardless of our history. And China White even calls him out on it.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like, I told you to double tap him. Problem should not be here. What is wrong with you?
Yes. Again, why did you bring the rich kid to our drug slave island?
Exactly.
It's a fair question from your employer, really.
And then he's like, well, instead of getting my hands dirty, I'll just push him off the side of the boat. I mean, you're going to kill him that way. Why don't you just double tap and call it a day?
I am surprised that Oliver lived, by the way. I have no idea how he stayed afloat. They must have been close to the island to begin with. That's the only thing I can think of.
And that is comic lore. So they were trying to back into it. That's how he lived, because comics.
Because we got it, guys.
Because comics, I love it. It's gotta be. It's comics, man. That's how it goes.
Because it would have been a really short, limited series if Ollie didn't make it to the island.
True.
He could have pushed him off into a raft or something and said, you know, good luck or something like that.
And I guess that's one of the big differences from season one is there was no raft. There was no time with dad. There was no undertaking. It was just, you're kicked into the ocean. Good luck. Think you're shark bait now.
Just a bit.
Just a tiny bit.
The art, by the way, and I know we're going to talk that in a second. When he gets on the island, you can clearly see he's been exposed to the elements. He is not doing okay. So phenomenal way to portray that. So Hackett, kind of smart, kind of dumb, what he's trying to do is smart, but the way he's doing it is completely dumb. It's doomed to fail. And okay. But so that's Hackett, but we saw China White, which was awesome because it was very clear that she owned the Pacific Rim.
She's the boss.
And again, I like how she was drawn. Sometimes you just get those white panels of her jumpsuit without any detail or anything. You're just like, God, that's gorgeous art.
Yeah.
Just beautiful.
It's like a 70s anime, really, in the way it was, the way the suit was done.
Yeah.
But it's very clear that she is female, and it's very clear that she is a badass.
It's kind of like mic drop after that. There's not much else you can say about her. My favorite moment in the book with China White, aside from this is the guy in the cage monologue that she had, was when Ollie recounts the tale of Robin Hood at the end. And she goes, I can respect a man that knows that his end is coming. He's like, yeah, not really what I had in mind.
No.
Yeah, just making it up as he goes along.
Yeah.
The threading, the arrow through the cable, that was some fine trick shooting there. And we haven't talked about it, but Oliver has this fascination with Robin Hood, which goes back to his childhood, basically. And he really knows how to use that bow and arrow. He's never used it for sport. He's never used it to kill anything, but he knows how to operate this thing that he has. And which is why he made it out of a truck spring, right? Because he figures he can make it and he can actually kill stuff with it and survive. It's a castaway sort of vibe, by the way. He is surviving. So it's some phenomenal stuff.
Well, and a lot of the first book in the series, or the first quarter of the graphic novel, deals with him before he gets on the boat and goes out to sea. And really being that jerk, spoiled rich kid Ollie at that charity auction where he throws the $100,000 bid in right off the bat for the original Green Arrow bow, or the, sorry, Robin Hood bow from the movies. And you can see his fascination with it. You can also see that he's blind drunk at the event and overbidding.
Oh, yeah. He's ridiculously drunk.
I honestly didn't know where we were in the character development at that point in time, so I didn't know if this was a Batman-esque sort of thing, a Bruce Wayne sort of thing, where he's just playing the part at this point in time. No, this is how he was prior to the origin.
This is billionaire playboy Oliver Queen. All he does is go out and drink and womanize and act a fool, and he's doing all of those in the beginning of this book. Well, we don't see him womanize, but we assume.
Yeah. He's got the bad long hair, so if you think back to season one, this is the pre-island wig, and it kind of works. And the scene where he actually bids $100,000 for that bow, and Hackett just holding his head, and it was just done in silhouette. It's a beautiful scene.
Actually, at that point in time, the 2007-2008 time frame, I'm thinking in my mind, like, I'm trying to remember the show that was on Sci-Fi, but there was a show on Sci-Fi that dealt with TV and movie props and the auctioning and that sort of stuff.
Yes, I remember that.
I want to say Treasure, Hollywood Treasures
or Hollywood, something like that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking back to that, and I think a bow of this magnitude that is inspiring of Green Arrow, that is inspiring of Robin Hood, well, it actually was Robin Hood, but I think a bow like that would have gone for $100,000. So that's not out of the realm of plausibility in my mind, but the bidding wasn't there. The bidding had started at $1,000 and he just upped it. And everybody's like, oh, well.
Yeah. And then turns around and pukes.
That's Ollie.
That's our boy. So you're talking about Ollie. The question is, how close was he to the show Arrow that we're podcasting about? And more than that, did you empathize with the character throughout his journey? Was it believable to you in this story, not in the TV show? Chris, what do you think?
So I do empathize. I enjoyed the character, but the problem is Stephen Amell's portrayal of him is what's first in my head. So I'm always going, kind of like Stephen Amell's more.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's good. It really is. And I see the inspirations. It's just that's what's in my head first. That's the problem.
Cool. SP?
Having read a little bit of the rest of the Green Arrow series, the new 52 Longbow Hunters, before I got to this book, and seeing the origin of the Green Arrow on Arrow, I gotta say, I like what's portrayed here in year one is closer to what the character actually should be. And it's in his mindset to become a hunter, right? Which I don't think we ever really got in season one of Arrow. He was just surviving. And the only reason he was hunting was because they had to kill Friars.
Yeah.
And then came the whole thing with his friend and the death of Shado, and he was grossly affected by that. So it was a different vibe. He didn't become a hunter. It was more self-preservation, and the hunter part comes through in the comic a little bit more.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Oliver we had in this comic is much more independent. He doesn't have someone holding his hand through everything. Oliver we got in the TV show, he got trained by Slade eventually. He got trained by Yao Fei. He had people looking after them from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. The Oliver from the comic was, you wash up on land, you better figure out a way to do it. And that's where you get that line, well, thank God for the Boy Scouts, where he kind of figures out how to do some of his own. So this Oliver's more independent. The Oliver in the TV show, much more deadly, I think.
See, I doubt that. I think he has just this innate ability to be as good as he is, and it comes through better in the comic than it does in the TV show. And in the TV show, it's more of an ensemble cast. We haven't gotten back to Starling City or Star City or whatever it is in the comic at this point in time. It's probably Starling City. But he is a solo guy, and he was solo when he first got back to Starling City as well in the beginning of season one. So I just think we've seen two different sides to the character. Because
it's fair.
What we've seen in the TV show has been he is solo and he's learning how to become part of a team, which has taken literally 4 years now.
And he still doesn't have it all the way right at times.
Nope.
No. I don't think on the island, and we've seen in the show that it's not all about the island, but I don't think he was ever a leader. He was inspiring, but he never had a team dynamic to work behind him in most cases.
No, that's fair.
So now he's got a team that relies upon him. And I think that's it's a different situation. Now, the Ollie on this island had even less of that. What I really like about Ollie in year one is the point where Tiana basically says, hey, listen, all right, you were hurt. Now you've come off your drugs. You're better. There's a boat. Go sneak on. You're done. You're out of here. You don't owe us anything. And that was the turning point. That was the crux for this character in the journey of the hero to say, I cannot turn my back on these people. And that really affected me reading those panels.
Right. Now, in that particular decision, though, in a rational mind, 2020, Monday morning quarterbacking, yeah, get on the boat, go home, get some help, come back with your own private militia and take them on.
Right. And she's right. His voice means something. I mean, he's rich boy, billionaire Oliver Queen. The fact that he returns is at least a media cycle. He can come back and be like, hey, there's some really bad S happening back on this island. Let's go back there.
But remember, he's seen what they did with the rest of the village on that island. He found that well with the bullet holes and the dead bodies. There's no guarantee. And again, I think she said, they're almost done on this island. They've almost got an entire container ship. The harvest is almost done. They don't need us.
They were going to go to starvation rations and the weak and the old would have been dead. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Good call.
It was cool when he decides, and again, with the crappy bow and then later with the Robin Hood boat, I'm going for it. I'm doing the right thing to save these people and I'm pulling out all the stops.
It was pretty convenient that bow didn't really move from being on deck after the ship got beached, basically. Comics! It's comics! I'm not complaining. I'm just nitpicking because that's my job on here.
Well, and the boat was full of water, but it was fully functional. All he had to do was bilge it out and the engine's just going to work fine, even though the engine's at the bottom of the boat and probably waterlogged. Yeah. He's not going to have to clean that out at all. Just dry it out.
Well, he doesn't know much about engine maintenance, I wager.
Thank Crom for the Boy Scouts.
Now, in the TV show, remember, he is a mechanic genius because he was just watching his dad play with their hobby aircraft and knew how to make a radio work. Come on, guys.
It's comics.
I can do this. I know something about this. Hey, Stephen Amell, if you could do that, come to my podcast rig and make that work. There you go, buddy.
Actually, yeah, come make my podcast rig work too, and then we'll record a Starling Tribune once you do it.
Exactly. Have fun with Windows 10, buddy.
The other thing I like about Ollie's character is they really established his disdain for guns, which is a bit different than what we've seen with Ollie in Arrow, that when he picks up the AKs and throws them overboard and he's like, I've got no time for guns. And I think that's going to be, at least in the DC universe, one of the defining characteristics of Green Arrow as we go forward. And it was good to see them really focus on that, or at least highlight it in year one.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a difference. The Ollie we have, he'll use a gun. Remember, we had that moment in season 3. It's like, what? I never said I didn't know how to use a gun.
So the boat is beached. So it's in shallow water. He throws the guns overboard in shallow water. Okay, even if I didn't know anything else, I have watched Saving Private Ryan, right? I have seen what happens at the beginning of that, and a lot of people get their guns wet, and it comes out and they work. So, throwing the guns in the water doesn't automatically make them inoperable. It takes a while for that to happen. Just saying.
Yeah, it kind of does.
It looked like pretty shallow water, so it's not like somebody walking up to the boat won't go, hey, look at that. Three AKs.
I mean, they were waiting in the water coming up to the boat anyway, from one boat to the other. Okay.
So there might have been a couple of inconsistencies, but I come back to the fact that I like that it sets up his disdain for firearms in this. And it's not really explained, except for the fact that people were shooting at him and he had a bow and no, I don't like that. So, all right, I can buy that.
Put it on the bat checklist.
Yep, fair enough. Wow, well done.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Hey, quickly, guys, let's talk about the art. Graphic novel is only as strong as the combination of both story and artwork. Your favorite panels or images from this book?
I enjoyed the poppy fields.
Yes. For lack of a pun here, it kind of popped out on screen with that. I mean, the colors in this book, everything just pops so well, and that's what I really enjoyed. It's so different than what you'd expect if you've watched the show where everything's dark and grim. And
yes.
Nice.
The full page, iconic panels throughout this. And of course, we're talking about something that was, what, 6 issues long?
Yep.
And so there's at least 6 or 12 of these full page things. And even to the last shot with basically the start of Longbow Hunters. This is straight out of Longbow Hunters with this art here of Ollie and then the city and everything.
That felt Batman-y to me, but I don't complain. With the whole perch on the rooftop overlooking the city, it's something you see a lot from Batman and Spider-Man and things like that. I never really thought of it as much as a Green Arrow thing.
I am showing another example of a full-page panel of Ollie drawing the bow back with the sun behind him. It's just very, very... The colors are earthy and green, and whenever Ollie is involved, whenever something else is involved, it is a little bit different colored. And I'm not a comic expert. By no means am I an art comic expert. Better people have taught me about it, like Neil, like Sean over on Voices of Defiance and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm struggling with the whole descriptive stuff. It's been years since I've done a comic review back when I was guesting on the Fanboy Buzz. So guys, I'm a little rusty. I apologize.
Why don't I jump in with a couple of my favorite scenes? The first is in about a third of the way through the book, maybe a quarter, when the drug runner's plane is spotting Ollie for the first time on the beach. It's not a two-page spread or a splash page. It's two single pages with a couple of inset panels that basically let you know what's going through his mind. And he's standing there, serene, facing this incoming plane that is firing at him with his makeshift bow. And he decides, I'm not running. I'm taking this plane down. And that would have been the last panel in that issue as it transitioned. My other favorite part, and I totally agree with you guys on the poppy fields, beautiful coloring and the gradients in the background were just beautiful. But when it transitions out of that into the deep forests, when he's having his showdown with Hackett, and it changes the entire color palette to black and green, and those are the only colors that are used. And again, I mentioned at the beginning, colors by David Baron were absolutely beautiful in this. You feel like you're under that jungle canopy where it's dark and oppressive, but at the same time, just so incredibly lush.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a couple of my favorite scenes.
Absolutely. And the boat on the beach with the purple. If you are on the beach or in the mountains late at night, so high altitude or reflective off the ocean, you have a purple hue to everything. So that's what it was with the beached Pacific Queen. And just like the deep forest scenes or deep jungle scenes, it was great. And then the docks at the end had a metalish steel vibe to it all with purple and black and gray all intertwined there. So yeah, as far as the art goes, it was diverse. Each issue to me had a different feel, a slightly different feel to the art. It separated the episodes as it went on. And like I said, again, I'm not a comic expert. I'm an engineer. I'm not an artist. So there's my disclaimer.
Yeah, that's the problem. My brain's wired the exact same way. My background's engineering.
Guys, well, let's talk about Arrow. I mean, we've already talked about what we like and what we've seen transition in, but do you think we would have had an Arrow TV show without this source material? Or do you think, I mean, this is a character that goes back 50 years. Even without this, would we still have gotten this TV show?
No. From what I know, the back comics that go back 50 years, very different vibe. And I think that they wouldn't have had the same feeling as we have in the Arrow TV show. And let's not forget, Arrow is the first modern era comic book show. It predates even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., definitely predates Flash, predates Constantine and Supergirl and everything. So Arrow is the one that started the modern swath of comic book shows that are on TV today. I don't think we would have gotten it without this comic and Longbow Hunters as well.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think we would have gotten the show, but not the same feel. They would have stuck more with the Batman light feel of things, because if you remember, there's a lot of influence in the Nolan trilogy in the early seasons of Arrow, tied in with the influence I've seen in this book now. So I think without this book, a lot more Batman feel to things, and Arrow would basically be their Batman light TV show.
That's what I meant, and I don't think it would have done as well. I think we might have not have gotten Flash and Supergirl. And I'm not sure about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We probably would have, but it would have been even a different feel to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they wouldn't have had Arrow to compete with.
And I totally agree, by the way, SP. We'll talk about this perhaps in another hiatus cast, but Mike Grell's iconic Green Arrow, The Longbow Hunters, actually came out in 1987, which showed a very dark, a no-tech, no-trick Arrow, Ollie, in Seattle. I think the combination of the two gave us the Arrow that we have today. I totally agree with you, SP, and this kicked it off. If you take a look at shows like The Cape and Heroes that came before it, they didn't set the tone for the modern era of superhero TV show. I think you're right. Arrow did.
Cape is so bad.
And even Lois and Clark, what's that other?
Well, I guess Smallville. Smallville had a 10-year run. I mean, that's closer.
Right, but it didn't have the same vibe. It was different sort of show.
So Smallville was a teen soap opera, seasons 1 through 6, maybe early 7. And then from 7 to 10, it tried to turn itself into a superhero show. It's when they had the showrunner change. A lot of that changed. But even then, this is a better superhero show era. I'm biased, of course, because we're on this, obviously. But
yeah, and Cajun Sean in the chat actually says that the Justice League cartoon, Justice League Unlimited, which was great, and Young Justice as well, which came out around the same time, and the characters on Smallville, when they brought Green Arrow in, probably at least brought some more popular media attention to it. I don't think it kicked off a lot of Arrow fanboys at that point in time, though.
That's fair.
Right.
You said Young Justice, and it made my heart ache for a couple minutes there. I missed that show. It was so good. So good.
I'll be honest. I liked Man of Steel. I don't think it would have drawn me into the DC universe as much as it would have had it not been for Arrow. The Nolan Batman movies did not grab me. It's hard to explain. They're a little bit too unrealistic, I guess, for me, and a little bit over the top, I guess, which is fine for comics, but it just didn't resonate for me. So that is what we had in the DC universe until Arrow came along. And I think that Warner Brothers and DC were moving ahead with their movie universe, but I think what they're seeing is that this television interconnected universe that they have with the 3 or 4 shows that they have is doing a lot better than they thought it would. And I'm guessing maybe they think it's a mistake that they've just jointed them, or maybe they think it's fine. I don't know. There's been conjecture on several podcasts, us, Gonna Geek, Crimson Comet, about the Flash movie. And that's going to be the crux. When you don't get Grant Gustin on the big screen, how are the audiences going to react to that? I think that's going to be the big divestiture in the movies.
I think you might get some with Justice League too, because the rumor is Green Arrow is in that. And without Stephen Amell, who, for lack of a better term, is the godfather of the DC television universe, I think that'll rub some people the wrong way too.
You got to remember at Comic-Con last year to introduce Flash, Arrow, iZombie, Constantine, everything DC, Gotham, I think even, or maybe not Gotham because it's disjointed, but Stephen Amell did the intros and the MC for all the DCU stuff at Comic-Con, and they were recognizing without Stephen doing this role, we wouldn't have what we have today.
Very true. Very true.
He's the Clark Gregg.
I was just going to say that. You can't pin it exactly on Clark Gregg because it's really Tony Stark in the Marvel Universe, but Clark Gregg is a big reason why there's an interconnected Marvel Universe.
And with Legends of Tomorrow coming up, I think that interconnection is just going to get bigger and stronger. And some rumors that came out today, maybe we'll touch on later. But
ooh, tease, tease, tease.
So what do we got left for this comic, though?
Anything else you guys want to talk about? I could probably talk about it for hours, but we got some news to get to here.
So real quick on the comic, round the table. We recommend it for other people to read, yes?
Absolutely.
Definitely. If you're a fan of Arrow, this is a must read.
It's essential reading, I would say. I just want to make sure we make that clear for anyone who's listening. We were gushing about it. Let's wrap it up and say, read the book. You'll love it.
I would argue and say, this is about the 12th time I've actually held up the comic. I would say that this is required reading before you start watching season 4, if you haven't watched season 4 already, which is unlikely because you're listening to this podcast. But if you haven't started watching season 4, please read this comic first. And if you're in the middle of watching season 4, grab this now.
Well, here's a question, though. Is the comic a spoiler?
No.
Not if you're caught up on Arrow.
Because you have the mysticism piece, which is not in the comic. You don't have the same bad guy. And it's a different type of origin story.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I totally. I just want to get your perspective on that because I read it way before I started watching the show. So I had no choice.
Yeah, there you go. Go get it. Read it. It's great.
Awesome.
So we do have some news. One of the reasons why we wanted to do the podcast this week is we didn't want news stacking up for 2 weeks. And while you might get some of this on Nerd Alert News, this is specific to Arrow. So we're going to go through it, right?
Let's run through this. So first up, Stephen Amell. We all know that he is a social media genius, a 12th degree black belt in social media. He actually, yeah, exactly. His kung fu is strong in more ways than one, I guess. He's mentioned that he is going to start a weekly web series, basically web interviews with members of cast and crew. I think he's going to use the Facebook video interface for it. So if you want to see behind the scenes, if you want to see Stephen Amell, you know, digging into our gig with live vidcasts, then definitely check that out.
I've seen this work well before in college sports, where a junior or senior on the team is a communications major, right? And so for part of what they do when they show the show on the internet or whatever special channel that they have for the conference, it's actually the team member that's interviewing other team members. And it actually works really well. And I'm looking forward to this, especially with Steven's take, because he's funny, he's astute, he's smart, and maybe he'll do some shirtless. We'll see.
That's how you get the hits, man. You do it shirtless.
Hey, who wants to take story number two?
Oh, let me take this one because it's entertaining to me. Goatee Gate continues, guys. If you remember, Stephen Amell had made some jokes about growing out a goatee on Twitter, so then everyone thought, oh my god, he's going to do the actual one. He was at the Heroes and Villains Fan Fest this past weekend. He was asked if there's any chance he grows the famous Green Arrow goatee. Did anyone want to guess what he said here? Anyone?
Yes.
No.
Really?
He said, there's no plans for the goatee to happen on Arrow. I'd love to grow them. Once we're done with the island flashbacks, I tell you what, once we're done with them, if I'm not working over hiatus, I'll grow a horrible goatee. And I mean really, really bad. So I'm all for it. Do it, Steven.
But then again, he said he's not going to grow it on Arrow. Maybe that's a Legends of Tomorrow future Ollie who grows the goatee. Huh?
Could be.
Or they changed the name of the show to Green Arrow.
It's an evil goatee.
Let's step back a second. He's got a point. If he's doing the flashbacks and the current stuff, there's no way that he could actually grow a goatee. You can't hide the goatee, right, in the flashbacks. You have to be clean shaven. And if they're really shooting both at the same time, which they are, then there's no way he can grow one until the island flashbacks go away.
Two words for you. Green screen.
Hey, virtual effects, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? No, because I think they save up their VFX budget. I just think the wig department being asked to, hey, could you whip up a goatee with some of the old wigs?
That'd be awesome.
That would be horrible. Don't go there, guys, please.
The title for this next story really intrigues me. Unbridled Rage If Felicity Dies. I think like the entire DC TV show audience would rage, not just Stephen Amell. So what exactly, I didn't have a chance to read this. What did he say?
Yeah. So basically comicbook.com did an interview with Stephen Amell to say, well, there's a lot of fans out there speculating about who's in the grave, like we have done
every week.
Yeah. What? Sorry, would, how do you think? Yeah. Don't go there.
It could be Mama Smoke.
Could be Mama Smoke. But they said, so Stephen Amell, how do you think the fans would take it, and how would Oliver take it, more importantly, if it was Felicity in the grave? And his exact quote was, somewhere between confusion, desperation, complete and utter sadness, and unbridled rage. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
I think that's exactly how you get Deathstroke. You kill Felicity, and then Ollie becomes Deathstroke. That's what happens. Just saying.
And that's how you get villains.
Yeah. They kill the women they love or their parents.
All right. We had this teased throughout the last few years, but apparently, finally, we have somebody cast as the Calculator.
That's right. They've gone back to the well. In a sense, Greg Berlanti's cast an actor he's worked with before in projects such as Everwood, Eli Stone, and No Ordinary Family. Tom Amandes, I think is how you say his name, has been cast as the Calculator.
Nice.
And what's cool with this, they gave us a little information about what he's going to do in his arc as the Calculator. According to the article over at TV Line, they say, a criminal mastermind and technical genius, the Calculator, aka Noah Cutler, uses his advanced skills in computer science and internet manipulation to blackmail Roy out of retirement to do his bidding, which leads to an epic battle with Team Arrow.
I see.
I can't wait.
Episode 12, right?
That's correct.
And that ties into our next news story. I think Colton Hayes took to Twitter just on the weekend and said, I'm happy to be back in Vancouver to shoot Arrow. So, yeah, there are no Marvel snipers in the DC TV universe. Colton's just getting out there and saying he's back on Arrow.
But I mean, even casting in the Marvel universe is out there. So, I guess, except for Captain Marvel, who was supposedly cast, but then not cast. But I think that in this particular case, it's TV show. Yeah, I'm going to show up. Okay. Yeah. It's just part of how it goes. And it gets people excited. Look at what happened with Constantine, with Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's going to be on Arrow. Biggest ratings jump ever. Okay. I think that's good. And with Roy coming back, I think it's going to be Arsenal. I've heard several people call him Speedy. Now, you can't call him Speedy. It's Arsenal.
Yeah, we got a Speedy already. He's Arsenal. Now, okay, we know that in the DC universe, Arsenal loses an arm. He gets a robot arm. He basically pulls a Winter Soldier. You think he's going to lose an arm?
No.
No.
The tech doesn't exist now for the robot arm in there.
Now, I could see, now, this is just pure conjecture. I don't think it's going to happen, but I could see that Oliver Queen is upset that Arsenal dies because he's so close to Arsenal. So I could see Roy in the grave. I think that would be a possibility. He's a character that is gone from the show. They don't have to worry about bringing him back anymore. His death would hit Ollie pretty hard based on their past experiences. I think it's a possibility.
I think there's a chance, but I was also thinking they might be saving him to try and come back and recast him to be in season 2 of Legends of Tomorrow, if they go the whole route of wanting to rotate casts on there, because he's becoming a name.
But in Legends of Tomorrow, you bring back people for that have died. So if he dies, then that's almost assured of the casting into season 2.
If you kill him, you can continue the arc where he becomes addicted to drugs, because that's how he copes with his resurrection, I guess. And you could touch on that and then get the robotic arm. It's possible.
Hang on, though. It's harder to shoot up heroin if you only have one arm, though.
That's true.
Or easier, you could have a little thing in there that automatically injects you. You just put the heroin in the arm.
The spoon prosthetic.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And so, let me give credit real quick to Cajun Sean in the chat room. We were talking about, well, a robot arm might not exist. He said, well, Curtis Holt could invent the tech for the robot arm.
And going back to our last news story, Cajun Sean in the chat room said there's also been rumors out there that Calculator may be Felicity's evil dad.
Yes, there are rumors to that effect, and that would work.
A smart, genius-level guy, that's where Felicity gets it from.
It could make sense. It really could.
You know what? At some point in time, we're going to have Wendy Miracle on the show, and we're just going to have to grill her left and right. Have her give stuff up, and you know she's going to trip up. You know she will.
I like this plan.
So this is a friendly shout out to Wendy. If you ever want to come on board, just contact any one of the three of us, and we will set a time for you to have fun with us. And I guarantee you, it will be fun. And yes, we'll grill you, but it'll be fun questions. It won't be hard-hitting, spoilery type of stuff. Well, maybe, but we won't trip you up too much. So there you go, Wendy. Please, come on board. And we'll even have Stephen Amell on to interview you, too.
And again, guys, I'm here in Star City, happy to come down and do this conveniently for you. I'll bring down a mic. We'll set up wherever makes sense.
You got the portable digital recorder. You're all set to go.
Exactly.
I like this plan. I like it a lot.
Okay, you know what else Naki likes? This next news story, because it is a continuation quest to hashtag save Constantine.
We brought it up a few weeks ago on the podcast that I think their goal was 50,000 signatures for the Save Constantine, Bring Back Matt Ryan petition. They have blown past 50,000. We're nearing in on 75,000. And there is a rumor out there, guys. Should we address this rumor right now?
That I will be part of Arrow Season 5? Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's announce that right now.
So, Stargate Pioneer Season 5, he is going to come in as
Felicity's love interest.
I was going to say Ollie's new trainer. That works too.
I could do that, actually.
The rumor has it that next year on Legends of Tomorrow, they're going to go to a rotating cast so it doesn't get stale, and that Matt Ryan is looking at a contract for 2017 for the next season of Legends of Tomorrow, which would be awesome.
It would be awesome. It would allow him to set his production dates for whatever else he's got going on in advance so that they could bring him in to more. Let's be honest, right now, he is very busy doing his stage stuff. And while he likes doing the Constantine character as well, he's got a full-time gig. So he has to take care of that because you got to bring home the bacon. And bacon.
Bacon. So I would love to see the moment when he comes on that show and runs into the White Canary and be like, hey, didn't I restore your soul or something?
That'd be awesome.
Hey, speaking of Legends of Tomorrow, you guys see the new trailer?
Yes.
I did. It's so good.
It was awesome.
It was. I can't not get excited over this show. The show is going to be amazing. I'm really looking forward to the show.
That one line where he says, I've seen Men of Steel die and Dark Knights fall. I was like, oh, I had shivers.
It's going to be awesome.
It's the multiverse. We finally have the DC multiverse.
So in this multiverse, he went to Batman v Superman and watched the movie already.
Or he read the comics and saw Superman die, then come back as a teen, a robot, and somebody else.
Actually, I think it's more like he came to our world, and then in March went to the movie theaters and watched the movie and went, hey, they died. And then got back in his time machine to do Legends of Tomorrow.
It's only a couple months.
Oh, yeah. If you're a Time Lord, it doesn't matter.
So January 21st, Legends of Tomorrow premiere. Is it a two-hour premiere? I'm thinking it's a two-hour premiere, and I can't remember.
I wouldn't be shocked if it is. I don't think I've seen anything official, though.
Yeah, it is the CW. All they have is 2 hours. That's right. So, yeah, probably just 1 hour. I can't wait. January 21st, it's going to be a fun day. We're actually going to be podcasting during that time, so I'm going to have to watch it later.
Yeah, thank Crom for PVRs.
Yes. All right, so we have some ratings information for the first time in a long time, right?
Yeah, we normally don't talk ratings, and again, I think our sister podcast, Crimson Comet, actually talked about these ratings, or they might not have talked about these. They might have talked about the Flash ratings, but Arrow ratings keep going up and up. And as the comicbook.com article says, the slogan for this season is aim higher. And we've got a 96.4 rating in the key demographic for this show. Flash is just above it at 1.4. So the fans are responding to what they're doing, a slightly lighter tone. They're responding to the pending crossovers and all the setup for Legends of Tomorrow. And I just think that's great for a show that we're all pretty keen about. Keep the ratings coming, guys.
Okay, I'm biased. I'm a host of a Starling Tribune podcast on Arrow. I'm also a host of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or a Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a podcast on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I like both of those shows better than Flash. I think Flash is a good show. I look forward to watching it every week, but I was just having this conversation with a couple of people today, and I had to say, I like Flash, but I think Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are better shows for me than Flash. I think Flash is getting a little bit too much into that 90210 relationship stuff. And again, that's just for me, and that's my issue with it. But if story-wise, it's good.
I can't pick between all my kids. I mean, yes, I'm a co-host on this show, but I love all the shows. They feed different parts of my comic book soul. The show, I mean, it's more dramatic. It feels like there's more consequences. Flash is more fun. It's kind of like popcorn. I need popcorn and I need a steak from time to time, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, for me, I'm like Neil. I can't really decide, and I'm going to get a little hate mail here. The one that's probably on the bottom of my list right now is probably Supergirl, because I don't have to stay caught up on it. I just watch that when I have the time. If I get like a couple days behind on Arrow and Flash or S.H.I.E.L.D., I start going, oh man, I got to watch these. When am I going to get the time? I got to watch these. I can't handle not knowing anything and people trying to spoil me. And Supergirl, I've gotten spoiled. I'm like 3 episodes behind. I'm like, that's okay. I'll watch it when I get the chance.
Yeah. Talking about Supergirl real quick. I know we're running long, but they had the whole flip-floppy episode thing because of the real world events that happened, and they couldn't show the one episode before Thanksgiving. So they showed the Thanksgiving episode early. I didn't know that they were actually going to come back and show the week before Thanksgiving episode this week. I thought it was just going to be in the can forever, but they came back and showed it. And after I watched it, everything made sense. So I'm glad they showed it. I think the sensitivities were down enough so that it didn't really matter to the wide world audiences. And after watching the episode, yeah, I can see why they were a little hesitant to do it. And I'm glad they paid respects to those affected in the real world about it, but I'm also glad from a watcher of the episode that they went and did it, and I'm enjoying where that series is going. So, DC, you're doing a good job with your TV shows.
Real quick, I think we should talk about the other rumor that Bleeding Cool had about Supergirl. I think Neil had sent us the link on that one, too, that in the back 9 episodes that CBS picked up, they're going to be doing a crossover of Supergirl and Team Flash.
Oh, yeah.
And bringing the Flash characters into Supergirl for a crossover to give them a ratings bump.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That would.
Which kind of gets away from the whole thing they've been saying, no, 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 these universes aren't connected. So if Flash can cross over, that would probably mean she exists in the Arrow universe then too, unless it's they jump through a dimensional portal in the Flash thing through one of the
they could.
To one of the multiverses and go there.
There's talk even that Gotham is involved in the same universe through similar means or whatever. So yeah.
No.
It's possible.
No. I don't want it.
And again, remember, so if Flash goes to National City, and that means Arrow is in that universe as well, that means the big blue Boy Scout is in their universe.
unless they do the multiverse stuff, which I think is the safest bet.
I saw what you did there, and I just want to say, after watching all the Supergirl episodes, they do say Superman. They do say Clark Kent.
They do.
So they do reference that character in both ways in the show. They just have fun with any other name that they throw on him as well.
Maybe they've got a quota. Maybe they can only say it a certain amount of time.
I wouldn't be surprised. All right. So moving on, we have, as we always do, a couple of interviews with cast and crew, David Ramsey, and then Hawkman and Hawkgirl are interviewed. And I can't wait to see that next week as well on the joint. But we're running a little long, so I will just say go to the show notes, click on the links, and go see these stories if you haven't already. They're awesome. All right. If you are listening to this podcast, we are part of the Gunna Geek Network. There is a billion other podcasts like it on the Gunna Geek Network. All geeky stuff, phenomenal ratings. We are going to the podcast awards. We're going to the Golden Globes. We're even looking at some Oscars this year. So if you want to catch up some of the other great talent on the network, you should go see Chris. What do you think this week?
So there's some karma here that I just talked about Supergirl being one of my least favorite of the superhero shows. And now I'm going to tell you about the Supergirl podcast. These guys can come get mad at me. So this week we're going to talk about Like a Girl, episode 6, covering the second episode of Supergirl entitled Stronger Together. Nikki and Haley are Aprilists this week, but still managed to come together with some advice for Supergirl. Kara gets a lot of advice on how to be a better superhero, and then we get an awesome crime fighting montage. We enjoy seeing that Kara's experiences are different from those of her cousin. We get a little more of evil Aunt General Astra before she's taken out by a crypto knife, patent pending. You can find those on Home Shopping Network for Black Friday shopping tomorrow. Just look up crypto knife. You'll find it. It glows green in the presence of Kryptonians. Find out if your friends are Kryptonians or not. Buy the crypto knife tomorrow on HSN.
From the makers of Sting.
From the makers of the knife wrench for kids. If anyone's watched Scrubs, you'll get that.
Also acceptable by TSA for your local domestic flights.
Yes, I love ad-libbing.
So, Neil, next week, what do we got on the Starling Tribune?
I think we've been waiting for it. So next week on the Starling Tribune, we are going to be reviewing Legends of Yesterday. Air date for that episode is Wednesday, December 2nd, and it is part 2 of this season's epic Flash and Arrow crossover. And speaking of crossovers, we may have a little crossover in store for ourselves. Director Thor Freudenthal with writers, and they brought out the big guns, Greg Berlanti and Mark Guggenheim.
So, as the producer of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., as the producer of Starling Tribune and a bunch of other podcasts, I have talked to the producer of Like a Girl, the Crimson Comet podcast, and several other podcasts. And, well, the two of us got together, Haley and I, and we will be doing a crossover next week. We are booting Chris out for the week, and we are getting Jonah Lobster in for the week to talk Arrow. Now, if Chris is available, we will love to have him on board. I think we record at the same time, so I'm not sure that's going to be possible. So, Chris, I will open the floor to you to provide us with some sort of audio feedback, if you must. Ooh.
So I don't have to be a sad panda for missing the entire show. I can be involved.
That is right. And like I said, if you are not recording at the same time, you are welcome aboard for a true crossover with Team Starling Tribune and Lobster.
Nice.
I feel like I just got voted off the island. No, joking.
No, you did not. You are a representative to bring forth that Arrow is the better show to the
In all seriousness, I'm looking forward to the chance to go back to Crimson Comet.
Go forth, those guys. Go again. Forth and represent. And
I'm gonna rep the power of Team Felicity.
Nice.
Well, you know, Lobster's a big Felicity fan too. So
he's a smart one, that Lobster,
and crafty.
He's also a fan of Hawkgirl too, by the way. If you listen to some of their latest podcasts. All right, moving on. I just want to thank our listeners. I want to thank our viewers. Thank you, everybody, for downloading the podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you for listening on Spreaker. And thank you for catching our replay on YouTube. You can like the episodes on Spreaker. You can like the episodes on YouTube. And if you download the podcast, rate, review, and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps with the discoverability to bring more great fans with more great fan theories on board. We really are looking forward to that.
As always, a special thanks to the live participants in our Blab chat this evening. We have had Cage and Sean here on U.S. Thanksgiving, or as SB called it, the one and only real Thanksgiving. given that I'm the only Canadian on the cast this evening, I'll throw you that prop, my friend. We've had other listeners jump in and out, I'm sure, as they fade in and out of turkey comas most of this evening. Thank you so much. We just have one Rocco Steady join us in the Blab Chat as well. So thank you, Rocco Steady, for hopping in, catch the tail end here. And I want to tell our other listeners that you can join us live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on blab.im, the Blab streaming network, and search for Starling Tribune or for Stargate Pioneer. And don't forget, after the show, we'll always open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts. Our next show on Geeks.live, I believe, is All Things Good and Nerdy, ATGN, Sundays at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. A.M., P.M., yeah, late at night. That's right, 11 a.m. So that's a morning podcast, 8 o'clock here on the West Coast.
And Chris, if people are looking to get in touch with us, how would they do that?
So there's a lot of ways to get in touch with us, but the simplest is head on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. You'll find all our contact information there. And while you're there, check out the forums and all the other great shows that make up the network. But to make it easier, if you want to get in touch with us and share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send us a tweet, or best of all, call us on the hotline at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Great episode, guys. Sorry, the live chat can get distracting at times.
The perils of live broadcasting.
That about wraps it up for another week here on the Starling Tribune. Guys, any last words before we sign off and open up the Blab to our live listeners? Chris, over at Roundtable Nerds.
Hero.
At Stargate Pioneer.
Truck Springs.
And I am Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with Island. This has been...
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.